Blog Talk Radio.
Jean-Luc, Geordi specs, mysteries on the holodecks, asteroids, triple droids, telepathic betazoids, transporter, deadly claw, visitor from L.A. Law, photons, no Kirk, captain has gone berserk, shuttlecraft, Council Troy, Dr. Crusher's little boy, Klingon rights, parasites, new heights, phaser fights, Data's head, Tasha's dead, Riker's hanging by a thread, celebration, transformations, everyone to battle stations.
Next generation on your favorite station. We start the series, but when we are on, it'll feel beyond. We start the series. It's the next generation on your favorite station. We start the series.
Well, good evening, Rick. Welcome to our regularly scheduled Comic Corner. Our last Comic Corner was Star Trek Picard, the special edition. This is just our standard Star Trek edition of the Comic Corner presented by Freakopolis Geekery in Whitehall, New York. We're going to be taking a look at Star Trek Discovery Aftermath, issue number 3, and Star Trek Year 5, issue number 8. Our phone number here is 646-668-2433. We'll be with you until approximately 8:30 Eastern Standard Time. If you'd like to give us a call, you can win a copy of Star Trek Origins Blu-ray, and all you need to do is call 646-668-2433 and recite the song you just heard. That's our opening song. If you can recite that back to me, I'll drop this Blu-ray in the mail to you, and you get yourself an early Christmas gift. Really quick, really easy. Call, recite, win. Can't miss it. Also, check us out on our Facebook page at Star Trek, excuse me, Trek Talk and Beyond on our Facebook page. And say hello there, see what's going on, check out all of our new shows. And please, bop on over to Patreon. We could really use your support in bringing you more great shows like this, like Stunt Treks, like Trek Talk, and like The War Room. We're always adding new podcasts to our lineup, and we can't do that without your help. So please head on over to patreon.com/trektalkin and help us out. We really appreciate it. So let's dive right in. With me, I have my Trek experts. We have with us tonight on the line, we have Charles. He's from Las Vegas. How you doing, Charles?
I'm doing good. Two more good comics to talk about. Looking forward to them.
Yeah, we got some good ones. And we also have with us Eric. Eric's out in Portland. How you doing tonight, Eric?
I am doing okay. I just got home from the office, and I'm ready to talk about some Star Trek comics.
And we got some good ones. And, of course, we have the shopkeeper himself, TJ. How you doing tonight, TJ?
I'm doing very well. Glad to be back so soon. I think this is unprecedented, if I remember correctly. Two Comic Corners in 1 month.
Yeah, that's unusual. But I think Picard warranted his own show, though. We couldn't have squeezed Picard in with all this other stuff. He deserved
it. Yeah,
it's
a tough
match. We took
the
whole hour.
Dude, yeah.
So,
one book.
Yeah, one book. So anyways, like I said, we have Star Trek Discovery Aftermath, issue number 3, which is the wrap-up of the 3-month arc. And we also have the continuing series, Star Trek Year 5, issue number 8, which we're going to talk about as well. So, TJ. Oh, yeah, anyway, there's one more thing I wanted to just mention real quick. Not real quick, but I just wanted to say that we here at Trek Talking are very saddened at all the losses that our Star Trek family has suffered in the past month. Most recently, DC Fontana, legendary trailblazing writer for TOS. Also, more recently, Rene Auberjonois, who played Odo on Deep Space Nine, and Marina Sirtis' husband, Michael, as well. So we've been losing Star Trek people a lot. So let's try to make 2020, let's try to live 2020 in their memory, and so they're never forgotten. So without any further ado, TJ, why don't we dive right into Star Trek Discovery Aftermath, issue number 3.
How'd I know you'd want to start with this?
Could it be the Klingons?
I think that seems likely, yes. I read it this afternoon after you guys have been raving on it in the chat for some time, and I'm pretty happy with it. So this is number 3 of Star Trek Discovery Aftermath of 3. This is the final issue in this little 3-act miniseries, talking about the fallout and from Discovery Season 2 and some of the specifically taking a look at Spock and how he's handling the disappearance of his sister and sort of coping with the sort of new chapter in his life. So I'll just get us caught up to speed real quick with this little blurb in the beginning. This is written by Kirsten Bayer and Mike Johnson, art by Tony Chastain, a really veteran crew to IDW Star Trek books. I think I'd pretty much recommend anything that they've put out. They tend to do a lot of the closely tied to ongoing canon stuff, any tie-in to Discovery, the annuals, stuff like that. You'll see those guys. This story takes place between the disappearance of the USS Discovery and the return of Spock to active duty on the USS Enterprise at the end of Season 2. Spock has reluctantly agreed to accompany Captain Pike to a political summit with the Klingons, but things go worse than he could have possibly imagined when a group of Klingons plotting against Laurel attack. Now Laurel is their prisoner, and Spock and an injured Pike have been forced into a snowy wasteland where they fight for their survival. And we pick up pretty much right where we left off in Issue 2, with sort of in the midst of this diplomatic meeting under attack. And we've got the silhouette of a Klingon at the top of page 1 with a bit of a monologue from the interlopers, sort of airing their grievances. And as we close in on the silhouette and it comes into focus, we realize it is Laurel on her knees and the surrounded by Klingon rebels. They sort of go back and forth, have a little spat, and let Laurel know that they're not going to kill her now. They're going to take her back to Kronos and have her be placed before the High Council. She, obviously is not going to let that happen too easily, and reminds them that she has a warship just waiting, hovering within the atmosphere of the planet that they're on right now, ready to take on these rebels. Of course, they let it be known that they came from that warship and they have it taken over. And it's unlikely she has many friends left on this planet, except for the two that are on the next page we see wandering through these snowy wastes. We get a little monologue from Spock. He's feeling like a little more confident in his role here now. To date in this miniseries, he'd been wondering if he should take some more time or if he deserves to be here, and is clearly pretty affected by the outcome of Season 2 of Discovery. But he carries Pike to safety at the bottom of this sort of large facility that the diplomatic meeting took place. He talks or thinks a little bit about talking to Laurel and knowing that, she warned of traitors, and it appears her suspicions were well-founded. So he's sort of processing this all. He leaves Captain Pike sort of at the base of this facility after telling him to rest there. Well, he locates a means of contacting the Enterprise. Their signal's being jammed to some degree here. Captain Pike tells Spock to find Laurel, but Spock says, with him being in such rough shape, he's looking pretty beat up lying there on the ground. He only has to take his orders at sort of face value. Spock runs into a Klingon. They have a little exchange there, and Spock takes the Klingon's weapon and sort of disguise and finds Laurel being surrounded by these Klingon rebels, and pretty quickly dispatches them in a very brutal fashion with this high-powered phaser rifle. Really, quite a violent panel there at the bottom of this next page with Spock firing this phaser at the Klingon rebels, and kind of took me by surprise a little bit. The two reunite, Laurel and Spock, and Spock quickly frees her, and they make a plan to hopefully save their skins by getting off this planet and reestablishing communication with the Enterprise, knowing that Laurel's warship is probably the reason that their communications are jammed. We get on the next page, a look at the inside of the warship at the bridge. Laurel surprises the rebels there with on screen and begins to take over the ship from the ground with sort of a captain's code, and flies the ship sort of into the side of the mountain, obviously killing everybody inside. In the meantime, Captain Pike and Spock, Spock goes and gets Captain Pike and lets him know what's going on, and that, Laurel seems to be sort of on their side. Next page, boom, this huge, awesome splash panel of the Klingon warship careening into this mountain, and they feel, Spock and Captain Pike feel pretty confident that they can trust Laurel now. Back on the Enterprise, after communication has been reestablished, Spock and Pike are able to make it back onto the ship, and we learn from Number One that all the delegates from the Klingons and the Federation are being treated inside of sick bay, and we get this great scene with Laurel and Kor, who we had suspicions that Kor was probably one of the rebels at the beginning of this, maybe, even though he was handpicked by Laurel to protect her. There was a lot of alluding and foreshadowing of his possible betrayal, but it turns out he was actually pretty loyal to Laurel throughout this. So one of Star Trek's, most famed Klingons, kind of a fan of the mother. Finally, Captain Pike and Laurel have a bit of an exchange talking about, how great this is that, look at this. There's a Klingon shuttle in the docking bay of the Enterprise. Like, who would have thought that would ever happen? And despite the discussions not going, 100% as planned, they, in general, went pretty well, and it's a step forward in the right direction, despite the casualties and sort of a new chapter for the Klingon Empire that's starting in terms of the Discord zone throughout this miniseries. And then finally, we get a personal log supplemental from Spock's perspective, and it appears he is finally back crewing the Enterprise full-time, feels a little more confident in his decision to rejoin Captain Pike and his crew, and feels like this is where he belongs to be as he awaits a signal from the far future, which I thought was a really cool nod to Discovery, obviously. So that ends this miniseries. I thought it was pretty solid. It's not my favorite. These tie-ins tend to be pretty good. This was not my favorite of the stuff we've seen in the past, but the stuff with Spock was really strong, I think, in my opinion. I know that may not be the opinion of the panel, but it's cool to see him sort of make okay with what's going on in his life and in the outcome of season two. Pretty enjoyable. What'd you guys think?
Well, I really thought it was, I liked the way, one of my little things is I liked the way this book started and how it ended, and it all takes place in the world of Star Trek. It all takes place almost in the blink of an eye. I mean, the window where it happens, like you said, is very narrow in the Star Trek world. Because we know that what happens when Spock shaves the beard, he puts on the uniform, he walks on the bridge, walks around, sits down at his display, and then he sees the seventh light from the future, where Michael's letting them know that the Discovery got there in one piece, and then they go in the other direction to go to some nebula or wherever they were going. So we know exactly what happens when he walks on the bridge. And it's such a narrow window to fill in what's been going on in Spock's brain. I thought it was a great story. I really liked it. I really liked how they dealt with the Cleave ship, because we never see that ship again. We saw it in the Battle of the Binary Stars. And when we saw the season finale, Discovery, we saw, you know, the D7s and the Cleave ship, but we never see it again after that. Now we know why, because she blew it up and killed all the traitors.
It's gone.
And Core is interesting, because Core actually was a traitor. When we first see him, he's scheming against her. And then he turns out to be the hero. Unless they're going to introduce more with Core in later Discovery books, which is interesting. But I have a question for you guys, though. I was thinking about this as I was reading this. Wouldn't at this point in time, wouldn't Colonel Worf be around as well? Theoretically.
Yeah, I mean, you're a couple generations before our Worf, so.
Yeah, I mean, Colonel Worf is the one that was defending Kirk and McCoy at their trial. And so, you know, theoretically, he could be around at this point in time. He would be much younger, obviously. I mean, we know that Klingons, I mean, look, we saw Kor, Kang, and Koloff on Deep Space Nine 100 plus years in the future. So it's not inconceivable that Colonel Worf is around at this point. Just want to throw that out there. But yeah, I love this canon adjacent thing that J.K. Mentioned when he was on the show. I really like it. And this story really feels like an episode. It feels like a short trek to me. I really liked it.
Yeah,
really well done.
The issue miniseries helped that to really feel like an episode. You know, you got a beginning, middle, end sort of thing going on, so that worked out pretty well.
I definitely liked it. I would give it 5 Batlets for sure. Absolutely. So what do you guys think? What do you think, Eric?
You know, I think I'm kind of a little bit with TJ on this one, in that I thought the series was good. It wasn't my favorite, and I think my favorite part of it was the fact that we get a little slice of what's going on there, like you guys were just saying, of Spock's kind of just before he shaves off the beard life. You know, he turns out to be in some ways not really a major character in the end here, except that he does, of course, save Lorca's life. And I almost wondered if, you know, if that this book kind of shows them bonding a little bit more in the kind of post, you know, season one aftermath, season two aftermath, which I think is pretty interesting. I also am not convinced that Kor is the has the honor that we think that he has. I mean, what's interesting is the way, you know, he's laying there in the hospital towards the end of this book, and Laurel comes in to chat with him, and she says, you know, she kind of says, well, a really smart guy would have orchestrated this whole plan and then, you know, removed himself from it so that he couldn't possibly be blamed for it. And he starts to kind of defend himself, and she says, no, I assure you, I now know the full extent of your loyalty. Rest well. That's pretty open-ended to me. That doesn't say to me that Laurel necessarily trusts Kor at the end of this. So, Jim, I think your point about potential future Kor stories is a good one, because I don't think I trust him, and I don't think she trusts him. And I think there's some really cool stories to explore in the Kor realm, so to speak.
The Kor
realm.
A couple
other cool things I noticed. Yeah. Did you guys notice that the rebels who had control of the ship and who had Laurel in chains, every single one of them was still bald? So they had not grown their Klingon hair back, except for the commander, who presumably would have been at Laurel's side on the Cleave ship. He had his hair grown back, so obviously he grew his back in order to, you know, obfuscate the fact that he was with the rebels and to make Laurel believe that he was with her and that in their mind the war was over and so they deserved to grow their hair back.
Yeah,
that's pretty good stuff. TJ, you said that one panel is super violent. It was, man. I turned the page. I was like, whoa. So
yeah,
that was a little surprising. Yeah. And then I just, you know, we've already said something about the Cleave ship, but I'll just say I love the idea of the flagship engaging impulse drive into a mountain. That is just so awesome. And the sound that that must have made, something else. So, okay book overall, decent series overall. I think I liked Shadow of Kaelas a little better personally, but still a darn good story. So, yeah, I'd order it on the order of like 4.25 to 4.5 Batlas overall out of 5.
Now, I also like the fact that when Pike is walking down the hallway, and he's getting sick because he ate all the gawk and bloodworms. And
yeah.
He says something like they have a negative effect on human anatomy or something.
Yes. Like it's not fatal, but the effects are memorable, I think she says.
Yeah, I was laughing because I remember Riker before he went and served on the Pog. He's down in 10 Ford and he's eating gawk and bloodworms and everything else and Pippius Claw and Pulaski sits down with him and Picard and they're watching him chow down on all this stuff and I, that scene came right to my mind right away. I'm like, oh, just like Riker. I thought it was great.
Well, yeah, it was great. And you know, the other thing that I'll just mention about Pike is I feel like Tony Chastain really captured Pike in this book. I don't know why, but every single time I see Pike, he just looks like Pike to me, and his mannerisms are like Pike. There's this one panel where he's kind of pointing at something. I think it's towards the very end of the book where he's talking about the Klingon shuttle in the Federation shuttle bay. To me, that pose just looks exactly like an Anson Mount Pike pose. So I was pretty impressed, you know, that some of the art on these, you can say likeness this, likeness that, but to me it's about the body mannerisms and kind of the way that people set themselves that really helps to communicate a character.
I really like the colors in this book, and I really like the panel layouts. They jumped off the page. It was really well written, well inked, and it flowed really well. I'm sure if you were reading it on your Kindle, I'm sure it moved at just the right pace, so... I really liked it. And Charles, you get to bring up the caboose.
Okay. Some of the things I really liked in this one. When you heard Laurel sitting there sending commands to the ship, it wasn't just, okay, boom, it's done. No, she went step by step giving specific orders to the ship. And the ship was sitting there acknowledging her commands and that they locked out command controls for the ship, for the crew itself. And that was interesting to see somebody just take full control of the ship and say, okay, the ship is a loss. It is done. I have spoken. That shows you the demeanor of a true Klingon. It's like, I'd rather risk a ship than to risk losing control of the Klingon. And then the line, you guys just kind of missed the line of number one. It's like, oh, you missed seeing the ship crash in. No, I can't believe you ate gas. They say the side effects on a human physiologically takes weeks to manifest. And she can't wait to see what happens to her captain from the physiological effect of him eating gas. It's like, yes, that's a bit of her humor. They brought her humor out. And it's, you really kind of looked at this and it's like, yeah, you really did kind of feel like, okay, these are the characters that him seeing the fact of being sitting there saying, wow, I've got a Klingon shuttle on my bay and it's not captured. And Laurel saying, well, you might not be able to get a Federation shuttle on Kronos for a while. But that they did such, but that Laurel's kind of leaving that a little open. And the ending shot with Laurel. I would say I owe a debt of Starfleet to Starfleet, Mr. Spock. Yet you still refrain from wearing the uniform. So I would just say I have become an admirer of the Vulcan people. For her to sit there and say, okay, I feel admiration for the Vulcans. And it just very powerful and very strong. It's like, okay, this isn't the last of Laurel. We will see Laurel again. Probably not until Section 31, unless we do some backstories on Discovery. Overall, I think it's maybe not my number one comic, but it's in my top ones up there. I really enjoyed what they did with this one, and I can't wait to see what they might come up with next. Even the changeover with Spock, of Spock just finally saying, okay, it's time for me to go back to the ship. It's time to put my uniform back on. It's time for me to go back to what I should be doing. It's like, yes, that is so Spock. Go ahead.
I agree. And it did feel like a short trek.
Yes, it did. It felt like a good episode. It felt like another good episode. IDW makes so many of these feel like, oh, it's just another episode of Star Trek.
Excellent job. Excellent.
Yes.
So we're going to take a very quick commercial break. And when we get back, we're going to talk about Star Trek Year 5, Issue Number 8.
And answer the phone.
This podcast is brought to you in part by the Freakopolis Geekery, the premier upstate New York comics and game shop. Centrally located between Saratoga Glens Falls, Ticonderoga, and Rutland, Vermont, the Geekery is a haven for pop culture and science fiction fans. For Star Trek fans, the Geekery features board games like Ascendancy, as well as awesome gaming titles like Star Trek Adventures RPG from Modiphius, Star Trek Away Team's HeroClix, and of course, Star Trek Attack Wing ship-to-ship tactical combat for the tabletop. The Geekery hosts casual play sessions, learn-to-play sessions, and sanctioned organized play tournaments with limited edition prize support. You'll also find comics and trade paperbacks at Freakopolis, including Star Trek titles from IDW. Lots of issues are in stock, and special orders are no problem. Whether you visit in person by shuttlecraft or beam in online to Freakopolis.com, you'll find yourself right at home at the Freakopolis Geekery.
And we're back. It's one of the things about doing the show live. There's no editing, so when my phone rings or AJ attacks my headphone and the dog barks at someone walking down the street, you guys get to hear it just like I do. So everything's live. There's no editing. And you still have time to call 646-668-2433 and win a copy of Star Trek The Original Series Origins on Blu-ray. I'd love to drop that in the mail to you right now, but you got to call. Really easy, really quick, lots of fun. Like I said, we're live. We're live right now. We'll be live for about another half an hour or so, so you still have time to give us a call. So, TJ, Star Trek Year 5, Issue Number 8. What can you tell us about it?
That's right. I can tell you all about it. So, Star Trek Year 5 is the current ongoing IDW title. Based on the fifth year of the original Star Trek series, sort of looking at what might have happened in their fifth year of their expedition. So issue 8 is the second issue of the second trade and the second issue of this current arc. As we've come to know that this book sort of runs in like a A-B issues. A sets up the whole sort of plot line for the B issue, and that sort of resolves it and brings it to a close. So this issue is bringing it to a close for this current little mini arc, although it answers a lot of stuff that we talked about last month, as well as introduces some new things too. So I thought it was a pretty solid issue. Star Trek Year 5 is written by Jackson Lansing and Colin Kelly, at least this number 7 and number 8, because that has been changing pretty frequently with this series, which is really cool. Get some different perspective and writing style and stuff, and most of them have been pretty solid, with art by Stephen Thompson. While making her way back to Earth, the Enterprise is caught in a Tholian web alongside a mysterious alien ship. Captain Kirk and Sulu launch a rescue mission where they make contact with Aal, an aquatic alien who is the last surviving member of their crew. Kirk develops a plan to free the Enterprise by destroying Aal's powerless ship, but before they can, the Tholians arrive. So we open on the bridge of the Enterprise with Mr. Spock sitting in the captain's chair proclaiming Red Alert. In the meantime, the bridge crew is trying to assess the situation, make do with what they can. Uhura is trying to send some peaceful greetings now that they have a Tholian dialect translator, to little effect. And Mr. Chekov is assessing the enemy's positioning and capability. Meanwhile, Nurse Chapel and Bones are with the Tholian child, who is not taking this arrival of his species mates very well. He's kind of freaking out. So we return to the bridge crew, and Spock and Chekov are assessing the situation. Spock, I hadn't noticed this on first read through, but looking at it now as I do this review, not looking too hot. Or maybe too, he is looking too hot, as we'll find out later in the issue. I apologize if this runs on. I'll try and truncate it, but it's a dense book. Year 5 in general has been pretty pretty packed full of content. So now outside the hull of the Enterprise, Sulu, Captain, and their new aquatic alien friend, Aal, are making plans to blow up Aal's ship in an effort to create ice crystals that will disrupt the Tholian web. And we get these great, very dynamic panels of them doing a spacewalk and attempting to fend off the Tholians that are climbing along the web and attempting to put a stop to their efforts. We flip the page. It gets even sort of more bombastic as the Tholians open fire at the three of them. We learn that Aal is quite capable in space, you know, doing some very sort of aquatic, acrobatic type moves. And while that's happening, Aal and Sulu make their way over to the Enterprise, while Kirk remains behind, unfortunately, attempting to finish their plan to blow up Aal's ship, and he gets stuck to the Tholian web. In the meantime, Spock declares that as soon as the ship is blown, that they're going to take the opportunity to get out of here. But Scotty informs Spock that the ship won't be ready for another 30 minutes as after power is restored to the ship on the whole. It takes some time to warm up the engines. Bright Eyes still sort of going ham at the hull of the ship, causing Nurse Chapel and Bones to sort of try and create some sort of airlock so that, you know, they don't get sucked out into space themselves. But while that's happening, Bones, is sort of not too happy with Mr. Spock, as he's threatening to leave the captain behind, as I said. And he realizes that is because Spock is running a couple of degrees hotter. He seems to have come down with something after mind melding with bright eyes in the last issue. You know, he hasn't taken proper time to decompress. It was a pretty violent mind meld. It was, you know, really, really seemed to affect Spock. And now Spock is calling all the shots to his detriment because he's not quite in the right state of mind. We see that Bright Eyes has opened a hole in the hull of the ship, and despite their efforts, he makes it outside and into the vast openness of space with a really great panel of him floating through space away from the Enterprise, having created this hole with a checkerboard or part of a 3D chessboard, his teddy bear, and some other toys and affects of his. So, you know, just a really great shot there of him floating away from the ship. And unfortunately, let's see. Oh, yeah. So the bridge crew catches word of that as Sulu and Aol make it to the bridge finally and begin to update Spock on the situation. But they trust Bright Eyes, and he takes to the Tholian web. And begins dispatching many of his brethren and gets a hold of Captain Kirk, having really seemingly have succeeded in his idea. You know, we weren't quite sure what he was doing, but he was not going to let Captain Kirk go. So he managed to make it over to him, and they have a nice exchange about, you know, their capabilities. Captain Kirk seems to be quite impressed with Bright Eyes' ability to act under pressure and seemingly care for a member of the human race. And as they fly back to the Enterprise, Aol's ship is blown into smithereens. The water inside, since Aol is an aquatic being, creates ice crystals that disrupts the Tholian web, and the Enterprise is free. Back on the Enterprise, we learn that after that, Captain Kirk is not doing so hot. He was able to be transported and beamed onto the ship, but he is not in a great state after being exposed to radiation and some time in the vacuum of space. Spock acting as captain for now. Back at Sulu's quarters, he is attending to some of his plants and things around his room when Aol is at the door. And we have this really great exchange about gender in terms of how different species approach gender, specifically humans and the Icosans. I believe that's what they're called, if I can find it. To Sulu, obviously, gender is part of his identity, and it's not very fluid. It is, you know, kind of set in stone, and is you know, he is a man. On Aol's case, it's a little more fluid. He doesn't see a reason to cage, or they don't see a reason to cage themselves in any particular gender of any type. And that leads, you know, it's just sort of a passing of cultural information and ways that, you know, Aol and humans sort of treat their own identity, which, you know, seemed very timely in terms of that's kind of obviously a big issue for, I think, Americans today, at least for a certain subset of people. And if it's not, you've certainly heard something about it. So, you know, just another moment of Star Trek being very timely and using sci-fi concepts to broach topics in our own political sphere and cultural sphere. So they have this sort of exchange that's very sweet, and they come to an understanding, and boom. You flip the page, and they're embracing and kissing each other, which I guess is maybe, you know, I don't know that, you know, it's definitely a little saucier than this book has gotten in the past, but it seems appropriate after what they went through together and the conversation that they just had. So I was a little surprised to see that, but, you know, the book got a little hot and heated there. And but outside of that, the Enterprise is back in functioning, despite the Captain Kirk being in sick bay, and is on its way back to Earth, hopefully, or maybe going to drop off Aol first. I can't remember exactly. And then we cut to a foreign planet where we see the sort of antagonist that was introduced at the beginning of issue number 7, this dark Tholian who was an interloper, but sort of had the ear of the Tholian High Council, or I forget the term they used exactly, but it is walking along the land towards this sort of sci-fi looking elevator capsule thing, as we learn that it is likely a sort of underling to an even greater being. And as the Tholian transforms into a cat, we learn it is Isis. And flipping the page, we learn the person at the head of all this, the head that started this Tholian war, in a sense, and why Bright Eyes is on the ship is Gary Seven, I believe, right?
Yep.
Yeah,
yep.
So big appearance there. I don't think anybody had theorized that, but it is an interesting piece of answer to something we had all been asking, and I think that's pretty cool. So, yeah, another solid issue. Like I said, this book tends to really be a big hitter for me. I think it is dense, full of, Star Trek-isms between the tech and the type of stories that are going on, outside of a couple arcs ago with the archaeological finding. But, yeah, I thought this was, in general, a really solid couple-issue arc that's setting up a lot of stuff. The cultural conversation happening in here is really good, and the art is always top notch. Some really great splash pages, some really making an impact on, as you turn that page, which is one of the strengths of comics, right? It's like you have this built in, you can read through a page as much as quickly or as slowly as you want, but you're always going to get something new when you turn that page. So that's always going to have some impact. And I think they use that really well throughout this issue. Also some really dynamic, action flight scenes and fighting amongst the Tholians and on the Tholian web and blowing that ship up, and Bright Eyes cracking out of the hull was really dynamic stuff, and I think it worked really well. So yeah, another solid issue. I thought this is probably one of the best ongoing books we've had since we started the show, I think, and since we really started diving into some Star Trek comics. So really happy with that. What'd you guys think?
Well, first of all, for me, the book really got good at the end. The whole Sulu exchange in his quarters with the fish person was awesome. I mean, that was really great. It was really deep. It was true Star Trek. But the thing about the scene that I liked was Sulu was watering Beauregard. You guys remember Beauregard was the red furry hand plant from the Man Trap. There was just some guy under a table sticking his hand up into a furry glove and wiggling his fingers. They called it an alien plant. That was Beauregard. And to see Beauregard is still in the lab and Sulu's still taking care of him, I thought that was great. I'm anal for stuff like that. So yeah, I liked that. And I really, really liked it when A.L. is coming on to Sulu, and Sulu's response was, "Oh my!" It was so funny because
that's perfect.
They used,
just awesome.
Instead of using Sulu, they used George, and I thought that was great. And I also it was great. Yep. Go ahead.
I was just gonna say, remember they did that in the Kelvin movies too. They paid homage to George with the relationship that the Kelvin Sulu had with his partner in those movies. So I love that in two different mediums now they've kind of, harkened back to George and not the Sulu character with the Sulu character.
And I think they did the same thing with the fish person, because one of the things that people complained about, even George complained about it, was in the Kelvin movies when Sulu had a boyfriend, a husband, and a child, Sulu never had any relationship with anybody in TOS or the movies. Most of the other characters were involved with somebody at some point in time, except for Sulu. He was just the helmsman, and that was it. And so now the fact that Sulu gives the speech about there's 32 different genders and I identify as a man and this whole thing, I could hear George saying all that stuff and not Sulu. And when he capped it off with "Oh my," and then the fish dude kissed him, I was just like, "Oh, this is," I was saying, "Oh my," I loved it. It was great. And then, of course, the best part, as TJ said, is at the end when the mysterious stranger, who is at this point a Tholian, puts down her claws, starts walking, turns into a naked woman. At that point, you're like, yeah, okay. Then turns into a black cat. And you're like, okay. Walks toward the shadowy figure, jumps into his arms. You turn the page, and it's Gary Seven and Isis, because Isis turned into a woman in Assignment Earth. And so I thought that was great, and I really enjoyed it. Yes, this was an the colors were great, just like they always are. The splash page with the Enterprise was awesome. And it was just, overall, it was a really, really enjoyable book to read. So, yep, I definitely enjoyed this one. Jamie, are you with us?
Yeah, I'm here.
Now, you got here a little bit late, so what did you think?
Yeah, I just had to do a little quick reading. But yeah, I thought the thing with the AL, if that's how you pronounce it, the fish people's name. But I that scene was shocking with the whole gender identity. I was not expecting that, but that was a really nice panel with the art and everything. And I did like the scene towards the end with the little cat. That was cute. That came shortly after that, in between the panel there of Sulu kissing the fish person, whom is still genderless. I don't know. That just shocks me. Maybe it's a man. I don't know. Looks like a man to me. But anyhow, I thought that was really great. And then the whole Tholian War couldn't have been better. It's been going exactly how I pictured it was going to go. And I'm really hoping that we find out what gender the fish people really are, which I'm sure we will. But I would give this book, I'm going to say, this one I'm going to go ahead and give a 9, because I really enjoyed the continuation of the last story to this one.
Yeah, this was a good one. I did enjoy this one. Eric, we're gonna make you wait to last. We're gonna let Charles jump in on this one, and you get the caboose. All right, if you don't mind. All right, so Charles, you're up next.
Love this one. One thing that kind of getting me suspenseful was what was going on with Bright Eyes, how he was reacting. And that we suddenly realize we think he's going to have to go out and fight his people and see how they try to protect sickbay as he is trying to escape. And how things change with Spock after he leaves. And that it's a little confusing what was kind of going on in that set. To seeing the fact that Bright Eyes was going in and rescuing Kirk. And how he did it. And how the Enterprise was able to finally escape. But it really threw me at the end. On the planet, was the being, Tholian being that was trying to spark hatred against the Enterprise, or was that somebody closer to Bright Eyes that figure was? I kind of realized all of a sudden Gary Seven's there. It's like, okay, wait, what's going on with Gary Seven? And we saw right at the bottom right of that panel where we see Gary Seven. To be continued. It's like, okay, now you got me. It's like, okay, we're going into a new episode. To be continued because of Gary Seven. Now you got my hook. That was the hook I needed because, oh, yes, that his adventures on Earth were very interesting, and it was kind of sad that They never got that series off the ground with his series. So Gary Seven's back. Okay, what's he up to now? Okay, now you got me hooked. Now I have to know what's going to happen next. I love when they do that to a series.
I agree.
The right hook where you think, okay, what's happening next? Got to wait for the next episode. I know we're going through 24 issues and 12 episodes. We're into a fourth episode. Now it's like, okay, you haven't lost me on it. Now I got to know what's going on. Okay, let's see what happens next.
And you're right. Gary Seven was a perfect hook for the end of that book.
Yes. So this wasn't as quite as good as some of the previous episodes in this series. But they still did a good job with it. And I'm still waiting to see what happens next on it. So I'll give it a good 8 with this one.
And guess what, Eric? You get to be the caboose on this one.
Sweet. Well, I'll just say that I love how this book opens. It opens with, like, the action is already going, right? And we've got all these great superhero poses of all our Star Trek friends kind of flying through either the water inside the alien ship or out in space. I don't know how the physics of all that works out, but it looks really, really cool in the comics. The colors, I love the colors in this book. They just popped right off between the like pinks and blues of the alien technology and Aeol itself. And then we've got the whole like orange color of the web and the Tholians kind of linking up. Just really thought the art in this issue popped like crazy. I love when the Tholians speak in their language, that little kind of pencil scribble that they show inside the word bubble. Because you'll remember their language is kind of this like terrible, high-pitched, like scratchy fingernails on a chalkboard type sound. I'm a little unclear on the physics of the actual aliens because I thought they had to be in like a really hot environment, and so going out into space seems weird, but I didn't even care because this story just grabbed me with the action right from the beginning. You guys talked about a lot of really good points in the book. I'll just cover a couple that I thought were really super cool. So I actually had to go back and remind myself who Gary Seven was. And so I actually went back and I watched Assignment Earth one more time after I read this book. And wow, what a cool character. He's kind of like, he's like half James Bond and half Doctor Who. In fact, I don't know if you remember in Assignment Earth or not, but he carries around this little silver pen that kind of helps him do various things, which is not unlike a sonic screwdriver. And then at the end of this book, he kind of shows up in this, you know, white boxy thing with a door in it that's not unlike a TARDIS. So I thought that was kind of funny. But what's more interesting to me is that I don't think we got enough about this character, and we don't really know too much about him or what his real influences and stuff are. I mean, in Assignment Earth, he says he's from the 20th century. He says something about his ancestors were abducted like 6,000 years ago, and that he's been his generations of his family have been training this entire time to do the things that he needs to do. You know, maybe they'll retcon some kind of tie-in to the temporal folks from Enterprise, the temporal, not the temporal police, I can't remember what they call them, but you know who I'm talking about, the people who keep track of the timeline. And then I love that was revealed to us through Isis, because you'll remember in Assignment Earth, Isis is a cat the entire time, and it's not until the very, very end of the episode that we see, that we figure out that the cat is actually a shapeshifter. And now we see also capable of not just becoming a human, but becoming a Tholian, becoming a cat, becoming some sort of kind of halfway in between type thing. So I love where they went at the end of this book with the Gary Seven character, because I don't think we know too much about him, and I think it's going to be really interesting exploring him some more. And I guess the last thing I wanted to touch on was just, you know, the panels with Sulu. The reason I really love those two panels so much is because they do talk about the fact that gender is an identity thing, and Aeol has a fluid gender, it sounds like. You know, is one gender at one time, another gender kind of between at other times. So to me, like you were saying, TJ, what a great way to kind of bring a 21st century discussion into the comics. And in using a character that that I think a lot of Star Trek fans have an association with, having the ability to talk about gender politics and cultural gender identity and that kind of stuff. So just really cool panels. Once again, love the colors, but thought it was a sweet story. So I really dug this book. Maybe it's because I'm a sucker for action and I really like the end of it, but I'd put this one right up there. I'd give this one a 9.
Yeah, this was a really good one. The panels were laid out well. The color jumped right off the page, as you said. And the Sulu stuff and the Gary Seven showing at the end really, really pulled it all together for me. And that's really what made it. I was like, wow, that was awesome. I really, really enjoyed it.
I think we should all go watch Assignment Earth one more time before next time. I think we'll all be happy that we did.
Yeah, definitely. Now, TJ, we have Star Trek Picard airing on January 23rd. We have two more issues to cover before January 23rd. And we also have Smoke and Mirrors. So when are we what's the release schedule for the books for the next show?
Yeah, let me take a look. Sorry, I should have had this up prior, but I can get it going. So this week we'll be getting Mirrors and Smoke. And then next week we'll have Picard number 2 as well as Star Trek Year 5 number 9. So we're going to get them all within the next 2 weeks. That'll set us up nicely for whenever our next comic corner is.
Now, so this brings up an interesting situation because our next show won't be until January 13th. So you probably will have Picard, the final issue of Picard by then as well, I would assume. Or
let me see.
Close to that.
I think this is all we're getting between then and now is Picard number 2, Star Trek Year 5 number 9, and Mirrors and Smoke. So we get a bunch of stuff in the next couple weeks, then it goes kind of quiet for a little bit.
Okay, because we're going to have to do a comic. We're going to have to do a comic corner before January 23rd when Picard airs, because we're going to have to cover Picard issue number 3 before Picard airs on CBS. Would you guys agree?
So,
yeah,
I think
we have a schedule for number 3.
Number 3 is out on January 15th. So it's that week that, you know, if we were talking on the 13th on a Monday, then the 15th, that Wednesday, would be, get the final issue.
So we could just delay a week and do our cast on the 20th. That would catch everything, and it would we'd be able to talk about it before the series starts.
That would give us 4 books.
That is a lot of books.
Yeah,
yeah.
That's a lot of books. Unless, I mean, we could push off Smoke and Mirrors because that's a one-shot.
Well, we might have to double up. We might have to do 2 between now and then. We'll have to see. Maybe one on the 6th, one on the 20th, something like that. We'll talk about it.
Well, that's what I'm thinking, the 6th and the 20th. What do you think, Jamie? The 6th and the 20th work?
Yeah, you might have to do 2 like we just did. It's all up to the rest of our co-hosts.
Yeah. This might be another one of those 2-in-a-month deals. Because I don't want to fall behind on Picard. I really, really don't. I mean, that's the big one. So,
well,
you know what?
I mean, all these books, we don't want to fall too far behind on any of them, because especially Year 5 keeps on rolling, right? So, yeah.
No, but with Picard airing on the
23rd, right,
we're going to want to do book 2 and 3. So, why don't we do... Okay. So, TJ, what books are we going to have by the 6th?
Picard 2, Mirrors and Smoke, and Year 5.
All right. So here we go. January 6th will be Smoke and Mirrors and Year 5. And then January 20th will be the Super Picard show. We'll do issue 2, issue 3, and what we think we're going to see on Picard, which will air on that Thursday. How does that sound? Does that work for you guys?
Yep.
Yeah, it sounds good.
Does that work for you, Charles?
Yep. I think I lost track of the schedules, but yeah, it would have worked.
The 6th and the 20th. Jamie, you're okay with the 6th and the 20th?
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay, so the 20th is going to be...
Hopefully the details are going good, because Amazon still tells me Picard issue 3 won't be out till January 29th.
Well, that would be...
That'd
be after the show. That would...
So hopefully that'll change up.
Yeah, I mean, on Diamond's website, it says it's the 15th of January, so...
Okay, well, sometimes I get notices where they do change updates occasionally. Oh, so.
Sure. Yeah, we know that well.
So let's keep, for right now, guys, here's what we're going to say. Here's our schedule for you guys that are listening. January, we're going to have another two-month Comic Corner next month. January 6th, we will do Smoke and Mirrors, which is the Mirror Universe Voyager one-shot story. And we're going to do Star Trek Year 5, issue number 9. And then we'll have another one on Monday, January 20th, where we'll do Picard 2 and Picard 3, which will wrap up the Picard countdown series. And then we'll talk about what we think we're going to see in the Picard TV series, which will air 3 days later. So that'll be our schedule. So you guys heard it here. That's what we're going to do. So, and I also want to point out, Thursday on Trek Talking, we're going to be talking about The Mandalorian, chapter number 5, The Gunslinger. And we have a double shot of short treks to cover. Ephraim and Dot and The Girl Who Drew the Stars are both going to drop on Thursday. So we're going to have two short treks and The Mandalorian to cover on Thursday, as well as Trek news. And we have a lot of birthdays, and we unfortunately have some deaths to talk about as well. So that'll be Thursday night on Trek Talk at 7:30, Blog Talk Radio. And let's see what else is going on. Anything? What's going on in your neck of the woods, Charles? Anything?
Not much, but I just was looking at my pre-orders coming up. And January is going to get interesting. February is going to get interesting, because not only are we going to get Year 5, issue number 11, we're also going to get a Star Trek Year 5 Valentine's Day special. So we're going to get a one-off in Year 5.
Interesting.
And it's not numbered either. We have an issue 10,
great.
We have an issue 11, and we have a Valentine's Day special.
Now, TJ, have they announced another Discovery book now that Aftermath is wrapped?
Not to my knowledge, no. Nothing new announced. I imagine we might get one more before the next season, but this Aftermath seems to sort of fill that hole, so we'll have to see, I guess. I'll certainly be keeping an eye on it and, you know, letting you guys know.
I mean, if they wrap up Picard, they wrap up Discovery, and that only leaves Star Trek Year 5 as their only Star Trek title, unless they put another one in there.
Yeah, going into February, that's the only one we've got. But I know they don't like to have, you know, usually they like to have two going at least, if not, you know, a one-shot and an ongoing or something in a month. So we'll have to see what March has in store.
Yeah, we'll keep up on it. We'll let you guys know. And Eric, what's going on around Portland?
Well, this Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. at Guardian Games here in Portland, which is at 345 Southeast Taylor, we're going to be playing some Star Trek Attack Wing. We'll be running the Drive OP from back in the day, but we're going to put a little twist on it. One of our community members here has invented a way of keeping track of your shields on the four quadrants of your ship so that you can, you know, pull all the shields from the port side and put them on the starboard side when you're firing broadside against one of your enemies. So we're going to try out those rules, kind of vet them, see what works, see what doesn't. So it should be a good time. Casual night, 130 SP, 2 to 5 p.m., Guardian Games this Sunday.
Now, We played our last Star Trek Attack Wing, unfortunately, on Sunday. So we're going to be switching over, and we're going to be doing Star Wars. We're going to be doing Star Wars Legion. We're going to be doing Star Wars Armada. We're going to be doing Star Wars X-Wing. And we might even throw in a Star Trek Adventures game, perhaps, if we can get enough interest. So we're going to be doing that now at Freakopolis Geekery. Starting January 5th, we're going to be doing a Star Wars Legion Learn to Play. Brett and I are going to bring all of our stuff. We're going to slap them on the table. We're going to play the quick match 500-point game, and to just get people a chance, because Legion is kind of, you have to assemble your figures, you have to paint your figures so it's fully customizable, which I think falls in great with the D&D stuff that's going on at Freakopolis Geekery right now, because they're having a painting contest with dragons and stuff, so people can paint their figures, and we could theoretically have a painting competition type of thing and just have some fun with it. So we're gonna temporarily switch gears. I'm not ready to give up on Star Trek. It's too much fun, and we still have a decent community there. But I really think that not producing anything for a full year hurt the game really bad. And I think not producing anything for Discovery or anything for Picard or anything for these new shows, I think really was dumb. They could have put out a new starter set, a new Discovery starter set, or a Star Trek Picard starter set, and used, you know, all the energy that from all these new shows to promote the game for itself. But they missed the boat completely, and now everybody's jumped ship and moved on to Star Wars. But we'll come back around with Star Trek again. So we're going to be doing Star Wars Legion, which is a great game anyways, and Star Wars Armada. I still have the Super Star Destroyer. I want to get it on the table and see how it works. So we're going to be doing Star Wars for a little bit, but we'll swing back around and hit up on the Star Trek again. So anyways, that's what's going on. Jamie, anything going on that you want to mention?
Oh, not much, really.
Yeah, I hear you. It's the holidays. It's the holiday season. Well, no, actually, there is something going on at Freakopolis Geekery, though, TJ.
There is.
Right?
This Sunday.
Yes.
Yeah, we're having our holiday party, a chance for the community to get together and have some holiday cheer in the comfort of your local friendly comic shop. We're going to have a photo booth, and Santa Claus is going to be there, and we're going to have the dragons from our painting competition and are being submitted that day, so there's going to be a lot of cool minis to check out, as well as some gaming and cookies and gifts and all sorts of holiday cheer, holiday music. So if you're in the area, we are doing that from noon to 5 or so on – not a hard dead, you know, timeline, but that's when we're open, on Sunday, December 15th. So it should be super fun, relaxed day of hanging out and getting ready to, you know, see all your friends before Christmas comes around.
It's going to be fun. We're going to be stopping by as well. So if you guys are in the area, swing by and say hello. We'd love to see you there. And that wraps up another awesome podcast, another edition of the Comic Corner presented by Freakopolis Geekery in Whitehall, New York. We're going to be back next month with two shows. We're going to have a Picard special on the 20th, right before we lead into Star Trek Picard, which will be on CBS All Access. And don't forget to tune in to Stunt Trek on Sunday night with yours truly, V. Leslie Hossman and Admiral Ken. We're going to be talking about, what are we going to be talking about? Oh, yeah. We're going to be talking about Star Trek actors before they were on Starship. What were their careers? What were they doing before they got cast on this legendary show? So that's going to be on Sunday. Yes, Planet of the Apes, exactly. And I also want to let you guys know now that there won't be any shows. There won't be a Stunt Trek. There won't be a Comic Corner. There won't be a Trek Talking for that week of Christmas and into New Year's, because obviously New Year's and Trek Talking around Thursday night. I mean, Christmas and New Year's are Thursday night, so there'll be no shows on Thursday, obviously. And if we're not going to do Trek Talking, we're not going to do the other ones either. So we'll be off air for that whole stretch, and we won't be back again until January 5th with Comic Corner. That'll be our first show of the year. But don't worry, because we will be doing the best of Trek talking like we always do every year. I'll go back and take a look at all the numbers of all the shows and let you guys know what the most popular shows were of 2019. So you don't want to miss that. And without any further ado, I want to say good night. Thank you to everybody for listening. Nobody called to win that Blu-ray, so it's still available. So if you guys want to call Thursday night, you can call Thursday night. Same rules. Just call 646-668-2433 and recite our theme. And guess what? You win. It's that simple. So mark that in your calendar. Give us a call. I want to say thank you to TJ for hanging out with us and helping us out with Comic Corner. Thank you, TJ.
Thank you for having me.
And I want to say absolutely thank you to my awesome co-host, Charles. Thanks for hanging out with us from Las Vegas, Charles.
Oh, always. Definitely
and
love my Comic Corner.
Of course, thank you to my daughter who's hanging out with me all the way in the other room. Thank you, Jamie.
Yep, and it's a pleasure, Trek talking, and live long and prosper. And yeah, if you're in the upstate New York area and or you happen to be in the Whitehall area, I strongly encourage you to check out the Free Gospel Geekery and join the holiday festivities.
It will be fun. And of course, I want to say thank you to Eric from Portland. He had to go, but thank you for hanging out with us, Eric. And thank you to each and every one of you guys out there for listening to us. And we'll see you on Thursday night for Trek Talking and Beyond. Good night, everybody. Be good to each other.
Live long and prosper.
Let's see what's out there. Engage.